Live from Seasons Restaurant on Main Street in Bangor, on The Pulse, AM 620 WZON, WZONThePulse.com, and the WZON app. This is Downtown with Rich Kimble.
Well, good afternoon and welcome into a Wednesday edition of Downtown. Rich Kimble, Bruce Pratt here with you. For the next couple of hours, a great guest list this afternoon, including Maine basketball coach Bob Walsh, Trini Kuznarek of Comcast Sportsnet New England, Kyle Draper of Comcast, Alan Adams from the Maine Edge. And we get things rolling this afternoon by getting on board the G&M Family Market phone line and saying hello to our friend Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Bob, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rich.
Great to have you back on with us. A big day in the baseball world as the Hall of Fame announcement just a couple of hours away. We've talked about who you voted for, who you'd like to see, and who do you think gets the call today?
The consensus view is that we are certain to see Tim Raines and Jeff Bagwell. We may or may not see three other people. We might see Trevor Hoffman. Let's see, who else? Come on, help me. We might see... I'm trying to think off the top of my head now, so I'm on a blank. But those two are certain, I'm really certain. And there's a possibility of a couple others. If we did get five, that would be only the second time that the writers in one season and one voting have ever elected five, and it is possible that that could happen.
Do you think we see, at least if not getting in, a big leap forward in the numbers for guys like Clemens and Bonds?
Apparently, there is we have had that, and they're in the 60% range, according to the we'll call it the exit poll conducted by this gentleman out in the West Coast, and it seems to be the view that the Bonds and Clemens will get in the 60% range, which they're escalating, and I think it's pretty safe to say that they're heading toward induction, if not next year, then the year after, as more and more people start surrendering, I call it, as I. have almost done, but not yet, it's just so fruitless and frustrating and impossible to be the judge and jury. Just let them all in. And a lot of people have adopted that viewpoint.
As a longtime voter, your criteria, I'm sure, has changed over time. It used to be that there were some numbers that were almost a guarantee. Do you look for overall dominance in the era? What are the factors that you consider?
Can't go strictly on a number, and once upon a time it seemed that 400 was a lock, then 500 home runs. So now we have a guy that we're not putting in with 600 because of his association or his alleged and belief associated with PEDs. Now, of course, is Sammy Sosa. One guy I was thinking of earlier, of course, is Pudge Rodriguez. He has a very good chance of getting in. Vladimir Guerrero has a good chance of getting in. So there we go. And along with Hoffman, those are the five guys. Two for sure, three possible. Now, my criteria is just overall, you look at each candidate individually. There's certainly certain numbers. 300 wins has always been a good one, and it may not be ever applicable again. It's very possible we've seen the last 300-game winner due to the five-man rotation and the way pitchers are pitched and the fewer innings that they pitch and the emphasis on bullpen. So that's possible. But... funny, there's a guy that is off the ballot, and there's a big story about him today, and that's Rafael Palmeiro, who had 3,000 hits and 500 home runs. And it's funny because at no point during his career, until one day I woke up late in his career and said, boy, look at those numbers. He's going to have Hall of Fame numbers, yet I never once for one second thought of him as a Hall of Famer. So there is a Potter Stewart eye test, I know it when I see it, component for it at times.
We're talking to Bob Ryan here on Downtown. The New England Patriots off to the AFC Championship game for the sixth consecutive year. Has Bill Belichick earned a spot in the conversation for the greatest Boston coach of all time? And from your perspective, who's at the top of that list? Would it be a Red Auerbach?
Oh, it's Red. And Red's the standard. And certainly Belichick with his track record in a different world. I mean, Red Auerbach competed when he got Bill Russell in an 8-19 league. And then finally, he personally competed in an 8-19 league, and then the league expanded to that. By the time Russell was done playing in 69, it was a 14-team league. And it was a totally different set of circumstances and how you went about winning a championship and what you had to do. Whereas the Patriots are competing in a far different world in their own league, and which includes a salary cap that has changed the landscape for so many teams, and only one coach has been able to negotiate it as consistently as this consistently, and that's Bill Belichick. We're talking about the 16th year of the Patriots' run now, and here we go. We're right back where we were in 2002, 15. You know, they have a chance to win another championship. So there's no question that you can't even. Who would you put up after Red that you'd even throw up there and being in this particular discussion? I don't think we can name anybody.
Bob, you were down helping present the Bear Bryant Award to Dabo Swinney of Clemson for the second consecutive year. At a time, and I know you love college sports, but at a time when the money is so big, and particularly when you look at Alabama and Clemson in that title game and the money those programs have, is it hard to view college sports in the same light that we did maybe even a decade or so ago?
There's so much wrong with college sports, as well as there's so much right with it, but the wrong is getting creepy. The ratio, the balance is being eroded. As I wrote in my book, about college sports, to be in love with college, to be a fan of college sports is akin to being in love with a hooker. I mean, you can't help yourself, but you know it's bad for you. And if you're a fan of college sports, you are an enabler. You are enabling a broken system that needs fixing, and I really think we need a national summit conference of administrators, of politicians, of athletes, of people that and television executives to figure out what do we want from college sports. The fact is that no other country on earth does this, and we are the only, and that includes Canada, whose college sports are very limited in basically a glorified Division III level. And we're the only country in which our institutions of higher learning provide entertainment for the masses. The only country, and there's it has completely gotten out of scale. The money at the top, only at the top, not at the bottom. The money at the top is frightening. The coaches' salaries are completely illogical, and that's across the board now at the top. It was never meant to be like this, but we have allowed it to get like this. As we've allowed a lot of other things to happen in our country, we've allowed it to get like this, and I think it'd be nice if we could figure out a way to make it a little more palatable.
Bob, the Boston Celtics playing very good basketball, 13 wins in their last 16 games, and Isaiah Thomas has just been dominant the last month or so, particularly in the fourth quarter. As you watch his development as a player, who is a guy in Celtics history that you would think would be the best comparison to Isaiah?
Well, there's never been a comparison. Tiny Archibald, because of he was a guard. He was 6'1". He was 3 inches taller or more than Isaiah Thomas, who is not. I don't honestly believe is 5'9". And just as much as Dustin Pedroia is not 5'9". I think he's probably more like 5'7" and change. But he's a remarkable talent, and he's gotten better and better. He has so much going for him in that he's strong. And he's incredibly ambidextrous. He finishes off with his right hand so well. When he goes to the basket, he's really hard to stop. Of course, he now is a terrific three-point shooter, and he's a clutch shooter. He leads the league in fourth-quarter points, which is a very, very interesting distinction. But he's tiny. By the time he came here, was strictly a point guard who scored. This guy is a combo right now. He's a scoring guard who can distribute. He's not. There's no question that he's a scorer first and a passer second. And Tiny, by the time he came here, was strictly a passer first, a scorer second, whereas in his prime back in Kansas City and Omaha, when he led the league in scoring and assists, was more of a balanced guy. But there's really nobody quite like him in Celtic history at this point in time.
Away from sports for a moment, Ben Affleck's got a new movie out based in Boston, early part of the 20th century. I was wondering, for your money, what movie has best captured Boston?
Probably Good Will Hunting. In some ways, and I think that seems to be a popular view, and I would subscribe to it. There've been plenty of them, and Ben's made some, and they've been good. But when they get into the accent, it always gets tricky and often humorous, and usually that falls flat. But a good deal of Hunting, it held up very well, I thought, and it captured a certain essence of Boston, certainly South Boston, very well. But we have a lot of things to choose from. This movie is not getting the reviews that Ben Affleck wanted, that's for sure. I have not seen it. I can only go on what the reviews have been and what the word of mouth is, which is that it's a disappointment. And I'm sorry about that. I would like it to have been a success.
Did you like Friends of Eddie Coyle?
Oh, and Manchester by the Sea, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Throw that one out there. I saw that, and that is good, and Casey has the accent. Yes, Friends of Eddie Coyle, thank you for reminding me. I think about that quite often around here, because we are not far from one of the interesting scenes. I'm sitting at the Boston Globe office, is not far from one of the scenes of the movie, and there were a lot of pivotal moments in that movie that were fascinating. And George, the late George, the author, had such a ear, one fantastic ear, and as good an ear for the Boston dialogue and for dialogue as you would ever want. And that was very good. But I will say that Messrs. Affleck and Damon, who shared the Oscar for screenplay with Good Will Hunting, got it down pretty well, too.
These are interesting times in America, and whether people are involved in acting or in writing, there seems to be a feeling among some folks on the internet that the only people who should be able to comment on political matters are those in the political game. Why shouldn't writers, actors, or anybody be able to speak out, especially in social media, about their political views?
I think that anybody who's a citizen of the country and has a feeling and opinion should be able to express himself or herself with the understanding that you are not holding yourself up as anything other than a private citizen who has the same view as your next-door neighbor or anybody else. That's all. It's not as if you're holding it up that it counts as more. No, but you have every right to be heard, especially these. Let's face it, this is the strangest transition of power in America probably since Andrew Jackson. Now, we're going back to 1828, but I don't think there's another parallel. Even Franklin Roosevelt taking over from Hoover in 32 in the height of the Depression, there was a more of a universality of American thought in that regard. I think this is the biggest departure in which the incoming president is being viewed as something so radically different than anything that they had previously known. Remember, all the other presidents up to Jackson were from Virginia or Massachusetts. They came from a certain social class. Andrew Jackson came from another social class and spoke to different people than had been spoken to in the American electorate before. Well, I don't have to, you know, the parallel is eerily, eerie in how that manifests itself all these years later. So this is a totally different circumstance, and anything that anyone who's alive in America today has never known anything like it's going to happen on Friday. Transition of power from this type of power person and concept to the person who's going to take office. And, you know, obviously we're all anxious to see how he's going to handle that responsibility.
Great perspective, as always. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Bob, thanks for being with us. Great talking with you once again.
Okay, same here. Bye-bye, Bob.
We'll see you soon. It's Bob Ryan here on Downtown, kicking off the show in a pretty fantastic way, like we do here. It's about 16 minutes after 4 o'clock.